Morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today we'll be taking a look at three important issues that have crossed our news streams in the last week and a half. And we'll be taking a look now at some important issues that I think how we communicate, how we use social media, and the effect of other countries' policies on international students. And we'll take a look at all of these in the next half hour or so. For those of you who are new to the Midweek Roundup, this is a weekly tradition we do on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, talking about issues that are relevant in the world of international education, and hoping today to have some conversation with you related to what we do in international education. And part of what we do is in this midweek roundup is take a look at issues that have particular relevance in what we do in international education, and also take a look at some of the ways that maybe institutions can adjust what they're doing in terms of international student recruitment and international education policy to help improve their own circumstances for international students on their campus. So let's get started today with first a reminder for those who are new. We do, through SMIE Consulting, we have conducted this midweek roundup for over a year now, year and a half, as a way to inform our audience on ways that you can improve your own international student recruitment strategies and other facets of your international education programs at your institutions. We do this as part of our services for the U.S. higher education community. And for those who are interested in finding out more about what we do at SMIE Consulting, our website link is in the comments section on the Facebook page. We also broadcast this live midweek roundup on all your major platforms, Google Play, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and Podbean. We're hoping that if you do not choose to or can't catch the weekly roundup live, you can catch it here or on our YouTube channel. But do check out the podcast as well if you want to catch up on past episodes and some of our takes on issues that have popped over our news feeds in the last few weeks and months. So I want to remind everybody for those new to the roundup and as well as those who have been watching a while, we do produce a weekly newsletter. It comes out on Mondays called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. That covers social media and international education news. And that's a free service from SMIE Consulting. We ask that you subscribe to that, and the link to the most recent edition is in the comments section as well. Veronica, thank you for joining me today. Hope you are well. Looking forward to hopefully having you contribute to some of the questions and comments on the stories today. The stories that we do cover in the Midweek Roundup all come from the weekly newsletter, all the SMIE News Fit to Share. That comes out on Mondays, and then we do this on Wednesday. Three stories that we've chosen from this week's edition were in Monday's newsletter, and we're covering those today. First, we'll look at communication strategies for travel. One of my consulting opportunities I have is with IDP Connect, and I do a monthly article for them on different facets of international student recruitment issues that U.S. institutions are facing and ways that they can improve what they do. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll look at the UK reintroducing their two-year post-study work visa and what that means for U.S. institutions and how we might be able to better communicate our value proposition to international students. And then we'll finally wrap up with a look at something that's near and dear to my heart. One of my older commitments and jobs was working for Education USA from 2008 to 2014 as their first outreach coordinator for the network. Doing higher ed outreach as well as social media for the network. And Education USA in its latest iteration has just put out a webinar this past week on how U.S. institutions can leverage Education USA's social media presence to better reach international students. So we'll talk about that as the end of the conversation today. So let's jump right in, and we'll talk first about international students how we are communicating with them as universities. This article, as I was referring to earlier, is one I wrote for IDP Connect, entitled, What Drives Your Communication Strategies Surrounding Your International Student Recruitment Trips? And I focus on the three main elements of time when you can make sure that you're maximizing your recruitment efforts when you do travel. Certainly before departure, there's a whole number of things that you can do to make sure your student prospects that are already aware of who you are, make sure that they are aware you're coming to their area, their country, their city, and hopefully give them an opportunity to connect with you on whatever your schedule you're able to provide them. And talking about during travel, what you can do. And this is probably one of the areas that is probably the hardest, having been a road warrior for a number of years myself. I've been fortunate enough to do recruitment travel in over 70 countries. And I've always found that during the actual travel itself is probably the hardest time to actually maintain communication with prospective students. And then there's the post-recruitment travel. What do you do when you get back, when you're tired and just getting over jet lag and you've got all these emails you need to respond to? How do you make sure that you're maximizing your initial responses after you've returned home to your prospective students that you've met with? So the article itself covers a lot of the tips that I've learned over the years and that I've picked up from colleagues as well, and particularly for institutions that are sending students, recruiters overseas to meet with prospective students and their families. It's always really a challenge, I think, for university reps because of all the logistics you got to worry about. Even if you're on an organized tour, you're thinking about, okay, when's my downtime? When am I going to have time to do X, Y, and Z to respond to emails? You're going to be capturing prospects information when you go to fairs or high schools. How are you able to leverage that right away? But you may also be forgetting, well, there may already be, unless it's a country you've not been to before, there may already be a number of students in your database that you want to reach out to that might be seniors or rising seniors this coming fall that you want to make sure know that you're going to be in country. And that can often be the thing, the detail that gets dropped first because you're just too busy worrying about all their logistics. But in reality, the institutions that can leverage that opportunity to reach out to students before they travel certainly give them enough notice to let them know you're in country. Maybe if you are going to be traveling and they want to schedule an appointment with you in case email is not convenient, if you have a WhatsApp number, if you're traveling most of the world, or in China, if you have a WeChat account and you're able to communicate with prospective students there, taking advantage of those tools is really important, leaving them your number. I know at a previous institution I worked at, we would have our WhatsApp numbers on our business cards and we'd hand that out. We would, particularly in India, where we found that was a very successful tool in helping to further connect us with the prospective students we already knew that might be wanting to connect with us in country, have us meet their parents, or for those that we met at college fairs, we would give them our cards with our WhatsApp number, and then we'd have a further conversation. As we're on buses going to and getting stuck in traffic all over the country, we would have opportunities to have conversations with those prospective students we've met at previous night's fairs. So there's a lot of different ways that you can do that. If you're capturing student contact information, Sarah, great to have you on. Hope all is well with you in Dubai. Glad you were able to join us today. We're able to really take a look at when we're traveling. We don't have a lot of time. We think we don't have a lot of time, but we do. Anyone who's traveled in India knows that you have long delays in traffic often as you're in between school visits or getting from the airport to your hotel or to the airport from your last visit, whatever the case may be. There is downtime that you have, and those that are particularly good at communicating and are good at using social media, good at using messaging apps, will take advantage of that opportunity to reach out to those prospective students they've connected with if you have a way to capture their information. So hopefully that's happening with your contact cards, or hopefully most are moving more digital in that respect, and email or iPad apps or some other kind of app for your iPads or tablets that you might be carrying with you for travel, a way to capture that information and turn that around and leverage that right away. There may be automated emails in your CRM that you're able to have sent out or ready to send out once you upload your contacts you're getting from fairs. And if you can do that while you're traveling, that's certainly, and the sooner after you've met those students and having an extra extra point of contact with those prospective students, the better. I'll relate a particular story, idea that we used to success at a previous institution where we had one of our representatives that was going to be traveling to Vietnam, attending a couple of college fairs in Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City. And we planned to have shortly after that, within a day or two while he was still in country, to have another have a live chat on a platform we were using to have connections and further conversations between students and parents that we met at the events, at the fairs, with our representative who was still in country, as well as one of our current students from Vietnam, who was able to chat live in Vietnamese with those students and parents. And that was just probably the most incredible experience I've seen in watching that happen over the course of my time in international education over the last 26 years, is seeing how quickly those students that we had met one or two days earlier in two different cities responded, because we handed out cards at these two fairs saying, hey, we're having a live chat in 2 days. We'd love to have you attend and ask your parents to come along as well. One of our current students from Vietnam will be on campus and able to live chat with you and answer your questions in Vietnamese if you need to help you understand better what our institution could do. And that proved to be an incredibly successful event in terms of yield. We had perhaps 400 students that we had met over the course of those two fairs, and we invited them all with these cards we gave out at the fairs. We invited them all to this live chat event a couple days later. It was a private event just for our prospective students. And we had over 200 of those initially met on those two college fairs attend that live event. So it really provided us a great opportunity to have some immediate connection with the students we met on our trip, and to follow up with substantive discussions from a student, current student perspective, talking to prospective students and parents were getting in on the conversations too, talking in Vietnamese, chatting in Vietnamese, to have their questions answered right away after initial interest was generated. The students met with us, they wanted to reconnect, and that fall we had our largest incoming class of Vietnamese students we'd ever had at that institution. So that kind of extra effort that we put in the preparation, obviously, before the trip, to prepare the cards, to set up the logistics for the event itself, the 13-hour time difference or 12-hour time difference at the time, that was important. And then the actual physically giving those cards out, making sure, inviting them to come, and then having the student in place to do the actual live chat. That was such an important tool for us, and one that I wish I would be able to replicate it, and hope other institutions can replicate as they move through their recruitment cycles with prospective student audiences. So a lot of options there, and really hopeful that other institutions can take advantage of some of these different communication strategies. And obviously when you come back from trips, not only like the case I was mentioning earlier with what we were able to do in Vietnam. Many of you will have CRMs. For those that don't, my goodness, that's the one thing you absolutely have to have in this day and age to really do a deep dive and be thorough in your overall presentation of your institution without having to do manual emails yourselves. And I know there are many of you who are in one-person offices that this is a real struggle. And getting access to a CRM that understands international is one challenge, but then also that you are able to have access to customize your own messaging and do segmentation of by audience type, by major, by country, by interests. Those are kind of the must-haves in this day and age for international student communication during the admission cycle. So I really encourage you to develop your plans for your international student recruitments, have something built in, not just pre-departure for these recruitment trips you're going on, but think about how you can do something on the trip itself, and then also make sure you have absolutely rock solid emails that you can be sending out to those prospective students, short emails that you can be sending out that touch on some of the key elements that they're interested in about your institutions. So that's certainly the key, I think, in any successful communication strategy. And hopefully this article from My work with IDP Connect certainly gives you a little bit taste of what that looks like or can look like for your own institution. We'll shift gears now and talk a little bit more about what's happened in the UK this past week. For those who have been following it, we've been talking about it actually for the last couple, 3 months here on the Midweek Roundup. But the UK, under the Boris Johnson administration, his government, actually the idea was floated by his brother, who used to be the universities or education minister, to reintroduce the two-year post-study work visa. It had been done away with back in 2012 by then Home Secretary Theresa May. Now it's been reintroduced, and at a time when the UK had experienced from between 2012 and 2016, 17, had experienced a downward trend or downward trend, or at least a very stagnant international student population growth. They had this past year had an increase and looked to be rebounding well, even in the face of Brexit, which still leaves a lot of UK universities uncertain as to what that future might look like. But when you talk about Brexit, we're talking about EU students primarily that are directly affected, and that will certainly be a piece of the overall puzzle for UK universities that they want to be mindful of and have strategies in place for how to deal with that, whether they have funding programs in place till there are deals with partner universities or other ways to help continue student flows from EU countries into the UK. But for the greater majority of EU of international students studying in universities in the UK, it's the non-EU students that are really the ones that will certainly have formed the majority, certainly from China, which already is well over 30% of international student population in the UK, followed by, and then India, which has been coming back up in the last year or two. This news of the two-year post-study work visa being reintroduced is just there's already evidence, and one of my IDP colleagues presented at a conference recently where he presented some data on a kind of a real-time impact of what this, once the news broke on that this two-year post-study visa was work visa was being reintroduced, the level of interest in the UK spiked dramatically. Whether that continues on to enrollments in the next year, that's to be seen. But certainly that is one area where I think the UK is going to be particularly well regarded for the next for the foreseeable future. Now, ironically, this reintroduction of a two-year work visa is interesting because when you look at it compared to the U.S., where students can have 1 to 3 years of work permission per degree level, in the U.K. this seems to be just the 2 years, no matter what you're studying. So it's gone from a separate work visa where in up between 2012 and this past week when it was reintroduced, international students in the UK had 6 months to find something and then get a formal work visa. But this, so they really had no time, nothing, no real time, and certainly with delays that we see in the U.S. for processing work visas these days and OPT requests, they have didn't have a whole lot of time. But one of the other stories that we'll see, we covered in our newsletter this week. We're not going to cover it directly here, but the general overall reaction in the international ed community, certainly in the UK, is a positive one. But one globally is it's a time will tell. The two articles that I posted the links to, one is on from the Times Higher Ed World University Rankings edition, talking about the details of the graduate route to work. And then the second article is from the Pi News that kind of gives some international perspective on what the thoughts are regarding post-study work in the UK. As anyone who's worked in international education knows, post-study work is high on the minds of many students that are looking at the United States for study. And certainly anyone who's recruited in India knows that's one of the issues that they're most hypersensitive to. There's always, and we've featured a lot of the articles over the last year, when any changes to work permission eligibility in certain countries or political talk about potential changes just sends the Indian student market into a tizzy in terms of what the potential fallout might be, positively and negatively. So this news for the UK certainly is a positive one. Brings it more in line with what other countries offer. Like I said, in the US, it's between 1 and 3 years of post-study work for each degree. In the UK, it's now 2. Australia has slightly different rules as well. New Zealand, Canada. Canada is actually much more open, probably the most open to study to work, to permanent residency, if not citizenship, of all the major English-speaking destinations. But certainly Australia has had a long track record in this for years, and certainly it's going to help. It's going to force, as one of my colleagues has said in the Pine News article, it's going to force the U.S. Other countries to up their game, and help. This news will certainly help the U.K. bounce back. But jury's still out on the longer term impacts it's going to have for institutions or other countries in terms of their abilities to perhaps maintain market share over other English-speaking destination countries, which we've talked about on the podcast and the roundup before. So still, time will tell, I think, is the buzzword for at least for how this two-year reintroduction of the two-year post-study work visa will be in the UK. But certainly, it's not going to hurt the UK whatsoever. It certainly will, I think, in certain markets, be a key benefit that will be jumped on quite regularly. We did actually feature a story in the in the newsletter this week on it was actually a recent report out of the UK that looked at a six-year history of Indian students that have graduated from UK institutions and the percentage that are working in their fields in skilled positions, and it was like 99%. So actually quite remarkable, even given the 7 years where they haven't had that ability to really carry out post-study work for a two-year period. This will certainly make that process a lot easier for Indian students looking to study in the UK. We all know how interested they are in the US, and that's and opportunities to work on campus and off campus, and OPT and H-1B are top of the list for Indian students coming to the US. So we'll see where that goes. What we'll do last with our last story this week is take a look at one of my own stomping grounds, Education USA. They do a series of webinars. They do it for a number for students, 6 or so a year for students, called Education USA Interactive. But they also do a series of webinars, not only from headquarters at State Department and IIE in D.C., but also from the regions. A number of the REACs will do information sessions, webinars for the U.S. higher ed community. And certainly, I always recommend them. Even before I left working at Education USA for 6 and a bit years, this particular topic is near and dear to my heart, and that is a webinar they've recently put out on engaging with social media to recruit international students. It's about a half hour webinar. The recording of which is on YouTube, and I've provided the link in the comments section here on the roundup on the Facebook page, and certainly encourage you to take a look when you maybe just listen to it. There's some decent slides in there that they have with ways that you can connect. They have really standardized a lot of the social media presence for the Education USA centers. There are over 458 centers now in 178 countries, and they do. And they provide that information during the webinar, but there's also one of the new items that they mention is that it's going to be an upcoming PDF that will list all of the various social media presence in the Education USA network. So really encourage you to check out the webinar, and certainly there's going to be things there that you might not know of. They also provide some very important suggestions on what you can do as an individual institution using social media to get the stories out about your school that will help prospective students and parents get a better sense of who you are and what you have to offer them. They give the examples of stories from students who have received scholarships, student and alumni success stories, And also using targeted student and alumni from particular countries that are maybe in your primary markets or secondary markets, depending on how you view those things. Then also offering them to speakers, students and alumni speakers for webinars and live social media events through Education USA centers, maybe when they're home for break, being able to visit or do an event with an Education USA advising center that they might have been in contact with while they were a student, a prospective student before they reached their universities. So there's a wide range of topics that they cover in this webinar, and I really encourage anyone just to have it on the background and maybe go while you're answering emails or what have you, but then go live with it when there's a particular topic that catches, or not live, but go actually watch the webinar while you're when something kind of piques your interest. So a lot of great content there with Education USA. Obviously, the network of advisors, they're the heart and soul of what Education USA is. The advisors on the ground that meet with the students, that will help connect with you, connect the students with you, that visit your campuses when they're in the U.S. for training or conferences. They make the Education USA network tick. And without them, Education USA wouldn't be what it is. So they can be your best friends. And that's certainly a lesson I learned early on in my career, long before they were even called Education USA in the early 90s. They were the overseas advisors, and that U.S. overseas advisors, and that was Education USA didn't even become a name, an actual entity, until 1999. So, my first international education boss, he made the point in my first few days I was on campus, in his office learning, and someone I certainly have a great deal of respect for in the profession, and he said, Education USA advisors will be your best friends. Obviously not calling them EdUSA at that time, but he made the point, and they are the experts on the ground. They're the ones who will have most direct contact with the students and can be able to tell you perhaps what the best ways to approach students in their country are, where they are spending their time on social media, perhaps. And a lot of that is contained in this webinar that the State Department folks did related to EdUSA and social media. So I definitely recommend that. Also, just for those who may have missed earlier, we do podcast this midweek roundup as well on all the major platforms. So if you want to listen to it while you're working out or taking a walking your dog, whatever it might be, certainly feel free to subscribe to any of the podcast links for on Spotify, Podbean, or also to Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher. So thanks again for joining me today, and we're going to be covering again these kinds of topics every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. So I encourage you to check back then and also subscribe to the new e-newsletter that comes out Mondays. So looking forward to connecting with you at future events and online. Have a great day.